thank you for this opportunity to share our work. So we're going to talk about like a compelling solution on the NISC hardware. And this is a joint work with Mingyoung and Dongho, and they're from the Seoul National University, and with my supervisor, Michaela Mosca. So let's take a step back and look at the overall big picture. So recently, Google launched a XPRIZE competition that is lasting for 3 years, and they invite competition about like two phases. And the first phase is about proposing powerful quantum applications. So it's targeting at proposing a solution using quantum computer that will demonstrate the quantum advantages, and this will help manifest the quantum computing power. However, once you have an algorithm, the next problem is how do you perform resource estimation? So in order to achieve large-scale universal quantum computing that is commercializable and also practical, we need to have the resource overhead as reduced as possible. So this brings in the compilation folks which is like people that working on like optimizing circuit and optimizing resources in a circuit. So in today's problems context, we're going to look at quantum compilation in NISC era. So although recently people have proposed like error-corrected logical qubits such that you will have a more better quality information unit, but the current landscape is still dominated by the NISC technology. Therefore, it makes sense for us to focus on the NISC hardware and perform better compilation on them. And consider we have a quantum program, and usually that's like a Shor's algorithm or Grover's algorithm, and they're abstract circuit design, meaning that they allow arbitrary connectivity and they allow any gates, basically just carry out an information processing task. And this is usually done by quantum programming languages such as Qiskit, Circ, and Quipper. But the next problem is, if you have a logical circuit, how do you map it to hardware? And this is non-trivial. And we call this problem as mapping a quantum program to NISC executable quantum circuit. And usually you have a number of restrictions, such as the qubits are not arbitrarily connected to any other qubits, and you cannot perform any gates that you want. You're always restricted to certain gate sets. For example, like at PsiQuantum's workbench, they are only allow you to perform certain rotation gates because they are easier and they are like cheaper. And finally, when you're performing operation, they're usually error prone and your qubits would decohere. So with all of this constraint, you need to think about how do you account for these restrictions when you're doing compiling. And finally, once you have a circuit that makes sense to your hardware, you want to convert them to machine code, and which correspond to like pulse controls and other control of qubits. And in today's talk, we'll focus on CNOT circuit. And CNOT circuit is composed of CNOT gates. And CNOT gates is a gate acting on two qubits. So if you look at this definition, you'll see that it has a control qubit and a target qubit. And then the control qubit condition will say whether the CNOT will act as a NOT gate or an identity gate on the target qubit. So when C here is equal to 0, it means that the CNOT will act trivially on the target. And if it is 1, then it will act as a NOT gate and it will flip it, as you can see by this truth table. So if we want to work on a NISC hardware, we need to be very specific about our platform. So we use IBM backend as our case study, and we use the calibration data to tell us about the noise and also like the restrictions of the connectivity graph. So as you can see, we're looking at a quad loop of IBM's backend. So it has in total 16 qubits, and you will see that you have the CNOT gate error, meaning that the coupling errors between two physical registers, and you also have a readout error, which is the measurement error, and you also have some gate error. This also explains why we focus on the CNOT gate, because if you look at the error spectrum of a NISC circuit, usually the CNOT gate error is much higher, usually of like order of magnitude higher than a single qubit gate error. And if you look at the CNOT circuit, usually you don't need to carry out the measurement, so we also don't care about the readout error. So in this scenario, we focus on CNOT circuit and concern only with the CNOT gate error rate. And we model this as a connected edge-weighted graph. So if you look at this connectivity graph here, every vertex corresponds to a physical register, and every edge corresponds to a coupling, or you can think of it as an allowed CNOT operation. And if you look at this edge weight here, it says that if you want to successfully perform a CNOT between physical qubit 0 and 1, the probability that you will have the error is about 9.6%. And then if you look at this graph here, this is called the heavy hexagon structure. And the reason they're using it is because it has very nice scalability properties and it's more suitable for fault-tolerant quantum computing. So all things combined, our research will focus on the IBM calibration data and IBM backends, and we'll propose a solution that will give us a better routed CNOT circuit tailored to this hardware. All right, so what do we mean by the architecture-aware CNOT synthesis? Firstly, you have to parse this sentence as two parts. The first one is CNOT synthesis. So synthesis means that if you give me an input, which is, for example, a representation of a CNOT circuit, then I can produce a CNOT circuit that has the same semantics as this representation. Now, what do we mean by this architecture? It means that we're not only taking into account the connectivity, but also the noise. So we are faithfully synthesizing a CNOT circuit while accounting for both the connectivity and the noise. And as you can see, if we are given an initial qubit map where this blue labels correspond to the physical qubits and the green labels correspond to the logical wire, and if you look at here, it means that logical qubit 1 is mapped to physical register 0 and logical value 2 is mapped to physical register 1. So you can think of this mapping as relabeling of your logical wire, as you can see here. Now, based on this labeling, you'll immediately see that because 0 and 1 are now in two quantum register, 0 and 3, that are not adjacent. So they're not allowed. So we have this little cross sign here said that, no, this is not possible, so you have to route it. And then, well, if you look at these two guys, so logical value 1 and 2 lives in quantum registers 0 and 1 respectively, so that you will be able to perform them on this two adjacent qubits. So this is allowed CNOT operation. But before we proceed to really give an architecture-aware CNOT synthesis, we need to be able to quantify noise in a CNOT circuit. This is actually still like an open research problem in quantum computing, in the sense that what metric do we use to quantify noise? So most people use average gate fidelity because this is like commonly used in physics and in information theory. So we are also going to do that. But more precisely, we identify that the average gate fidelity is not scalable because you'll see we're using the a superoperator representation which scale exponentially with the number of qubits. So in light of this, we are proposing an approximation of average gate fidelity, and we call this as our cost function. So let's take a look at the cost function mostly used in the literature. So as you can see, most people either use the sum of CNOT gate error rate, where PI corresponds to a CNOT gate error rate, or we use the product of CNOT gate error rate, or we use the synthesized CNOT count. So as far as we know, our method is the first one of its kind to propose an accurate approximation of the noise in a CNOT circuit. And we also benchmark our cost function with all of the state-of-the-art cost functions, and we show that our cost function provides an accurate and scalable approximation for the average gate fidelity compared to the others. So let me tell you about like the basics of the average gate fidelity. So if we want to quantify noise, we want to compare the ideal operation and the actual operation. So this means that we are trying to measure the distance between the ideal state and the actual state. So this gives us a definition of fidelity. And here we use the generalized Pauli channel to model noise in a quantum system. And we emphasize that this is not like the most general assumption, but it works for our case, so we'll stick with it. And here we are using rho and sigma to represent two states. One is the ideal state and the actual state. And you can see that the fidelity of the state can be calculated by the trace. Now, if you're looking at the gate fidelity, then you can generalize this notion by using the unitary and acting act the unitary on the density operator. So in a lot of literature, there exists a notion called process fidelity that tells us how to calculate average gate fidelity using the superoperator representation. So we can skip all of these technical details and just look at equation 4. If you look at this guy, you'll see that given a channel, if we want to calculate the average gate fidelity of this guy, meaning that how far is it from an ideal operation, all you need to do is to calculate the superoperator representation of this channel with the dimension here, where D corresponds to the input dimension of the channel. Now you may wonder, what is the problem? Well, the superoperator representation will become D to the power squared by D to the power squared, where D is equal to 2 to the power of n, where n is the number of input qubit. So you will see that this calculation boils down to calculating the trace of a superoperator. But in order to calculate the trace, you have to have the superoperator, which is exponentially scaling. So this is not practical if you want to do like a synthesis for a larger CNOT circuit. So what we do is as follows. Firstly, we give the exact definition of error probability of a channel by 1 minus the average gate fidelity, as you can see here. And we recall that this is a previous exact calculation of the average gate fidelity. Now, if we think of a noisy CNOT circuit, how can we decompose it into something that we know? Well, one thing that you can do is to assume no parallelization of CNOT gate, meaning that you could massage the CNOT circuit such that every CNOT gate occupy precisely one time size. And then because every CNOT gate is noisy, you can couple every ideal CNOT operation with a noisy channel, as you can see here. So our problem now boils down to how do we calculate the fidelity of a channel that looks like this, where you have precisely one CNOT gate and all idle qubits, and you have another channel that is composed of different channels horizontally. And you may wonder, well, you are actually making two very general assumptions. The first one is, you're assuming no parallelization of CNOT gate. And B, you're assuming no noise on idle qubits, but we know they're T1, T2 time. Is this a reasonable assumption? Well, our simulation result shows that even with such assumption, our cost function still approximates the average gate fidelity tightly, which is really good. All right, so let me tell you about the parallel error channel. So if you look at this figure, you'll see that we kind of up to the wire permutation, we're squeezing the CNOT to the top two wires, and the remaining wires are just idle qubits. And we assume that no noise on this channel, so we can calculate the average gate fidelity of this guy by just plugging in the P0, P1, where P0 corresponds to the error rate here, and P1 corresponds to the error rate here. And because in our assumption, we assume P1 is equal to 0, so we can further simplify this equation. Secondly, if you think of a consecutive error channel, meaning that you're composing every channel horizontally, and then you will have one ideal operation followed by like an error channel, etc. So we show that actually, if you assume P0 and P1 for the error probability of these two channels, you're able to approximate the average gate fidelity very easily with this product of the CNOT error rate, 1 minus CNOT error rate. And if you look at this guy here, so P0, P1 are usually like 0.01, like or even lower than that. And then this one plus this, like this guy is really small, because if you have n being equal to like 9, you have like 1 over almost like 1,000. So this is also going to be like just about 1.00001. So this value is actually quite good if you want to quantify the average gate fidelity. And then we combine this two model and we say, well, if we have a channel that is composed of CNOT gate and each one of them occupy like a time slice that looks like this, then we can quantify the composed error channel error probability as follows. And you'll see that this alpha here is actually alpha p is really small. It's like between 0 and 1. And then this thing is like lower than 1. And then this is also going to be smaller when n get larger. So you'll have a good approximation of the average gate fidelity using this calculation. But the problem is, we are now only considering two channels. But what if we have more channels? So we conjecture that the channel approximation when we have more than two channels are just the product of this 1 minus alpha pi, where alpha is some constant based upon the dimension of the channel. So as you can see, we are getting inspiration from the two-channel approximation, and we propose an approximation by using this alpha as our constant. And then the next question is, how close is it to the average gate fidelity, which is provided to us by Qiskit? So we use two measure metric to measure the distance. The first one is the root mean square error. This is a notion that is commonly used in physics. So it quantifies the variability of your approximated value and the targeted value. So the smaller it is, the better the approximation. You can think of this as an alternative of the goodness of fit test. And you can also have the maximum distance, which is easily calculating the distance between the real value and the approximated value. And we're using the Nairobi backend as our example. And in fact, in our paper, we also use two other backends. One is the quarter loop backend, which has 16 qubits, and the other is the chiral backend, which has 26 qubits. So here we only demonstrate just one backend. So if you look at the data, you'll see that if we're synthesizing CNOT circuit composed of 5 qubits, then if you look at the left-hand side, which this green guy corresponds to the goodness of fit test between the cost and the probability, you'll see that it's really, really small. And this means that the cost fit prop really well. But compared with the cost one, which is the sum of CNOT error rate, and cost two, which is the, if you look at this guy, it is the product of the success probability, and if you do one minus, it is the failure probability of a CNOT circuit, then cost is always better than the other cost function, as shown by this root mean square metric. Now, if you look at the other metric, which is a distance, you'll see that the distance between prop and cost is really, really small. It is between 10 to the minus 5 and 10 to the minus 4. So it's almost negligible in terms of the distance. But if you look at the other two cost functions, they're actually quite large. Now, if you look at a circuit of width 6 and width 7, you can draw a similar conclusion. You may wonder, well, why don't you benchmark with circuit of wider of larger width, for example, like 10 qubits or 12 qubits? The problem is you cannot do that without supercomputer. This is the best result that we can get using Qiskit transpiler on a classical computer. And we also apply multithreading, which means that we already exhaust all possible efforts that we could to calculate the large circuit. And width 7 is as far as we get. And we also noticed that if you look at this figure, you'll see that the cost 1, which corresponds to the naive cost function, is the distance between cost 1 and the error probability has reduced when you have larger CNOT count. And the reason for this is that if you think of summing up the error probability, the more CNOT gain you get, the larger sum you'll get, right? So your sum is actually increasing really fast, because it's like whenever you add one more CNOT gate, you will have more errors in the circuit. But the fidelity is not necessarily scaling as fast as the sum of error rate. So the distance between the error probability and the sum of CNOT error rate is reduced after a certain point. So this makes us wonder, is it possible that at some point, the sum of CNOT error rate actually provides a better metric for the noise of a CNOT circuit? So we perform another simulation on a larger CNOT circuit. As you can see here, our CNOT count is scaling up to 69. And then we show that even though the cost 1, which is the sum of CNOT error rate, is getting better at some point, but eventually it will kind of like go beyond the reasonable range, and our cost function still dominates a good approximation region for the noisy CNOT circuit. As you can see, the green line, which is our cost function, the distance between our cost function and the error probability is still the lowest for all the CNOT circuit.
Could you just clarify each three of the like cost function colors are again, just so I can, for the bottom picture?
Oh yeah, so.
So that I can understand what this graph is trying to show.
Yeah, so the orange one is the, so 1 minus PI is the success rate. And the product of one minus PI is the success probability of executing the CNOT circuit. And one minus success probability is a failure probability. So this guy is always the highest, so it's out of the window. We don't compare it. We don't care about it. Now, the blue one is a sum of CNOT error rate. It means that the more CNOT gate you have, the higher rate you, the higher accumulated error you will have. So that's why it's getting lower and lower. But because after a certain point, you can think of, so you have CNOT circuit, and this is a CNOT count. Know that here, this is a synthesized CNOT count. This is not the original CNOT count. And then this is the sum of PI. And let's say this is one. So if you have large enough CNOT, you actually explode above this one. But if we're using our cost function, we are always going below one. And because we're doing this one minus alpha PI. And then the average gate fidelity is about like this. So you'll see that maybe at some point, like this guy is getting like, or maybe like the average gate fidelity maybe is this. So at some point, this guy is getting closer to the average gate fidelity, but eventually it will just like the distance between them will get larger and larger. So this explains like why we decided to stick with our cost function, because the sum of CNOT error is just not very practical and reasonable for large CNOT circuit, because it will explode. Will go beyond one. And we know that the error probability has to be bounded by one, right? It cannot go beyond that. So based on the simulation results, and we have the following conclusion. The first one is, to the best we could, for circuit of width 5, 6, and 7, and if we want to use any CNOT circuit of different sizes, our cost function demonstrate a much minor deviation from the error probability compared to the other cost function. Secondly, when we want to quantify noise in a shorter CNOT circuit, our cost function outperform all the other cost functions in the market. And if we want to quantify noise in a larger CNOT circuit, our cost function perform consistently better than the others. So you can see from the figure that that we showed earlier. And we also look at other IPM backend and show that our cost function is adaptable to different backends and has consistent better performance than the other cost function. And by better performance, we mean it approximates the error probability much tighter than the other cost functions. So we good? Okay. So before we get to our CNOT synthesis that account for the connectivity and noise, I would like to introduce the architecture unaware one, because some people may have never heard about this term before. So when we think about a CNOT synthesis that is agnostic to the hardware, it means that we allow any coupling of qubits. So you can have any CNOT operations and you are unaware of noise. So if you look at the CNOT circuit, it corresponds to a linear reversible matrix that looks like this. And if you look at every row, it corresponds to an input qubit, which is 0, 1, 2, 3, as you can see here. And then every output qubit corresponds to a column here. So if you look at the first output qubit wire, it carries the parity of 0 and 2. So if you look at the first column here, it carries the parity of 0 and 2. So there's a one-to-one correspondence between a CNOT circuit and a parity matrix. Now, what do we mean by this is that you can also think of a CNOT circuit as a bipartite graph. So you have the input cluster and the output cluster. And then the bipartite graph is connected by this little thing in the between these two clusters. And you can think of it as the information propagation between the input cluster and the output cluster. And this biadjacency matrix, or this bipartite graph, is described by this parity matrix, which turns out to be the biadjacency matrix of this graph. And what you can see is, if you look at this guy here, 0, and then if you look at this 0 prime, you'll see that 0 and 2 are the two parity terms that participate in the output qubit. So you'll have this blue wire saying that, oh, my information from the input will be propagate to the output here. And if you look at the other diagram, you'll see that, oh, if I have a 0 parity, it participates in the output qubit 0, 1, and 2. So we use this two-colored bipartite graph to describe the information propagation in a CNOT circuit from two perspectives. One is from the output perspective, and the other is from the input perspective. And accordingly, if you look at the CNOT circuit in terms of parity matrix, then a CNOT operation corresponds to a row operation. And then you can see that if you have a CNOT where control and target looks like this, then you're performing a row operation of adding a target to the control. Or you can perform a column operation of adding the control to the target. Okay, so linear reversible circuit synthesis is by no means a stranger to us because this has been here since 2003. So what it says is, in order to synthesize a parity matrix, meaning that produce a signal circuit for it, all you need to do is to perform Gaussian elimination on this parity matrix. Since every row operation corresponds to a signal circuit, a signal gate, you can concatenate all of this output row operation, meaning that the signal gate, and you can produce a synthesized signal circuit, as you can see here. And each signal gate corresponds to a row operation. And this Gaussian elimination basically are just this guy, send the parity matrix to an identity. And because you know that the signal gate are reversible, then you can flip the output, which is this, and you can construct the signal circuit like this. So this is entirely just like a matrix multiplication problem. Now, alternatively, you can also represent a swap circuit using the parity matrix. What we mean by swap circuit is just like a relabeling of the wires. For example, if you have 0, 1, 2, 3 as input, and then you have the output as the on the right-hand side, then you'll just like send the input wire to different output registers, as you can see here. And you can also think of it as a bipartite graph, where your input vertices are now become new output vertices in the other cluster. And this information propagation is described by this permutation matrix. So if you look at, for example, the 0 prime here, it is the new output register. And here, it stores the logical value 1. So if you read the first column, you'll see that 0 prime column has 1 in row 1. So this gives you like a one-to-one correspondence between a swap circuit and the parity matrix. Now, yeah. Okay, so why do we need to think about the synthesis up to the permutation? Because you do not want to synthesize entirely the circuit by including the swap gates. But instead, you can factor out swap gates, and then you can only look at this part. Because we know one swap gate corresponds to 3 C0. By factoring out swap gates, you're able to significantly reduce the C0 count. And as you can see from this calculation, the more C0 gate you will have, the higher cost you will have, because cost closely approximate the average gate fidelity of the circuit. So we know that in order for us to optimize the reliability of the circuit, we want to reduce the C0 count as much as we could. So that's the reason behind the swap synthesis, meaning that we kind of move or factor out a bunch of swap gates at the end of the circuit. So in the connectivity-aware signal synthesis, we use the Steiner tree to enforce the nearest neighbor interactions. And we also assume that every edge has 0 edge weight. So because I'm running out of time, I do not have time to go over the perm roll call. But the overall idea is we're performing a connectivity-aware signal synthesis while factoring out swap gates at the end of the circuit. And this allows us to effectively reduce the C0 count. And what is our contribution is that we perform a noise-aware adaptation to perm roll call by, if you look at these 4 steps, meaning that if you try to identify which row and column to eliminate at each step, we're trying to embed a noise-aware heuristic to help us make a more informed decision of which column and row to reduce. And also, when we are let me show you this. So when we are traversing the Steiner tree, before we just use like one method, like you are moving parity from leaf to the Steiner node, and then move the parity from Steiner node to the leaf. But instead, we use a noise-aware heuristic to greedily compare all possible solutions, and we pick the cheapest one. And by cheapest, we mean that the solution that gives us the lowest evaluation given our cost function. So if you're interested, I'm happy to share with you the benchmark results. But I just wish to summarize what we did in this work. So we perform an approximation of average gate fidelity by using a parallel error channel and a consecutive error channel. And together, our cost function have a much better approximation than the state-of-the-art cost functions. And with this, we're able to quantify noise very accurately and use this as our cost metric to instruct the noise aware CNOT synthesis. And because as far as we know, PermLocal, which is the algorithm proposed by my collaborator and I 2 years ago, is the leading standard tree-based synthesis algorithm in the current literature. Like, as far as we know, no other algorithm surpass it. So we use the best known algorithm to make it noise aware by using the cost metric. And so we benchmark on three IBM backends. And these three backends encompass the most well-developed IBM backends up to date. So it contains they contain 7 qubits, 16 qubits, and 26 qubits. And using this benchmark results, we're able to compare our algorithm with Qiskit, Rocall, and PermRocall. And if you check out our abstract, you'll see that we give even like up to 200 times reduction of the CNOT count compared with Qiskit. And up to a certain point, the fidelity of Qiskit is just like, it's just really, really bad. But our algorithm performed consistently good throughout all backends and for all the size of CNOT circuit. And compared to the state-of-the-art PermLocal and Rocall, because these two algorithms are noise unaware, so our algorithm is making smarter choice at every synthesis step. And of course, our algorithm gave a much better CNOT circuit with high fidelity. So the next step for us is to perform a more generalized solution to the quantum circuit routing problem by, based on the machine calibration data, we want to perform a much better and accurate approximation of a noisy quantum circuit, not just CNOT circuit. This means that we need to account for the T1, T2 time, the crosstalk, and also the single qubit error rate and the readout errors. And then using this new cost function, we're able to quantify the noise in a circuit and use it as our cost metric to instruct the noise-aware routing problem. And so for example, like UN, you have the circuit synthesis, the global synth. We're able to combine the algorithm that we have with ComSynth or lazy synthesis or other general circuit synthesis framework to make it, to define an algorithm that would map any quantum circuit to NISQ hardware. And this will ultimately maximize the potential of a NISQ hardware and put us one step forward to achieve a large-scale, meaningful quantum computation. And that's it. If you have questions, I'm very happy to answer. Thank you.
Explain more of this alpha.
Oh yeah, so this alpha is derived when we are calculating the parallel error channel. So it is not something that we just created by magic. It is actually given by the rigorous calculation. So let me go to that page. So if you look at this parallel error channel, you have this part, which is something that is very close to 1 minus P0 times 1 minus P1. And then this is part that we think of it as a residual. Now, if you go to the consecutive error channel, you'll see that you can compose two channels that we just did using the error probability that we derived earlier, like this guy. And then you're able to find an approximation to the average gate fidelity close enough. And this is very, very close to the alpha that we just have. Now, if you take one step further and you're saying that, OK, now I have the parallel error channel and a consecutive error channel, how do I put them together? Then you can derive this calculation here by using the probability. Like, so you first think of the case when you have one noisy CNOT gate. And then you're able to use the previous calculation to derive this error probability. And this guy is the alpha that we have. And then when you have more than one CNOT gate, you can just use this guy as your error probability of one channel like this. And then you're going to plug it in into the calculation here, where you're replacing P0 by the prop of this channel and P1 by the prop of this channel. And then, so as you can see here, And then this prop is exactly calculated from this corollary. So it's actually a very technical constant that we derive from calculating the process fidelity and the average gate fidelity. So in our paper, we have like a very dense appendix that derives this entire calculation. But on the surface, you may not see like where does it come from. It's just like a way for us to quantify the noise for one noisy C0 channel. Does that help?
Yeah. Do you have any more basic questions? Like, can you briefly explain what is the quantum grounding problem you referred to?
Yeah, that's a good question. So, quantum circuit routing, quantum circuit placement, quantum circuit synthesis, they are all used interchangeably in many literature, but they actually mean the same thing. So let me go back to the slides, which is the quantum program. Quantum program is represented by a logical circuit. It is very abstract. You do not have any restrictions. Now, if you want to execute it on a quantum hardware, you need to map this quantum program to the hardware. And this is called quantum circuit placement problem. You're placing a logical circuit to NISQ hardware. But because when you perform this mapping or this placement, you cannot do any C0 operation. You have allowed C0 operation restrictions on the nearest neighbor interaction. This is where the routing comes in. Routing means that you are going from one point to the other, but you cannot do it directly. You have to route to different points, because if you have, let's say if you have a connectivity card that looks like this, and you want to do coupling of these two guys, and you do not have long-range connection, then you have to map the parity term to here, and to here. Not to here, but here. And then you can leverage this edge to do the C0. And this walk is called routing. So you can think of routing as an indispensable intermediary step to place a quantum circuit correctly and reliably on a quantum hardware.
So like in some ways, basically quantum circuit, it's actually not one problem, but kind of broadening problem for quantum hardware is how we design a intermediate procedure to represent like long range stuff we wanted.
Yeah, because you can think of, so usually people talk about compelling stack. And when we're on the logical layer, we have the quantum algorithm. And then on the hardware, we have, for example, superconducting circuit. Now, if you're mapping from here to here, you cannot do direct map. Then in order to make this failure success, you need routing. So routing is a technique that makes this map possible. And you have to have routing because you need to have universal quantum computing. If you do not have entangling gate, you do not have universality. No problem.
Thanks, Sarah.
Thank you.